Good morning and welcome to Spotlight 92. I'm your host, Malvin Massey, and of course, every Thursday we talk to the movers and shakers of our community, of the world, of people that make things happen for your benefit and mine. And our guest today is going to talk about his book that has been released, Peace Anonymous. It's The 12 Steps to Peace. Who would have thought the solution to man's great dilemma would come from a group of drunks? And the author is with us this morning, Mr. Johnny F. Good morning, Johnny F.
Good morning, Melvin.
Thank you so much for getting in touch, and thank you so much for an interesting book as well. I've been perusing through it, and so my first question would be, do you actually think it's possible for the world to come to peace?
What I've seen as a result of people deciding to live according to the 12 steps has been miraculous. I think anything is possible if people have the will to do so. And that's the trick. And I know that it's a very, very simple question. And when you ask people, do you want peace? Everybody says yes. But show me, don't tell me.
But it's so much of the ability to make war, so much of that is out of the hands of the average person. You know, the leaders and the people who are perpetrating all this animosity, they are so far removed from everybody else. How do you reach them?
Well, I think that is the dilemma. It boiled down to basically asking myself and other people a question, and what is powerful enough to change the world that we live in and the direction that our government's going in. And basically the only thing that I could possibly conclude was the will of the people. So if the people want peace, I can't imagine anything else that's going to create peace in our world if it doesn't stem from the group conscience of the citizens of our country.
Yeah. Well, we have a desperate situation indeed as far as trying to make people stop killing each other, and it's not just wars, it's just the situation that we're in right now with the gun violence and murders that are going on already. You use the 12 steps that were used from the famous Alcoholics Anonymous to apply to peace. How do you think that? How do you think those 12 steps can be instituted into the lives of the average person?
Again, it comes down to a decision. We have a choice, and I think that's the thing that a lot of people don't realize. So many people feel helpless, and they feel hopeless, and they think by themselves there's really nothing that they can do. But when you stop and realize that there's probably hundreds of millions of people in this country alone that feel the same way, I mean, you're no longer helpless. There's hundreds of millions of people who feel that way. So it really boils down to the people driving, assuming responsibility for what our government does. I mean, we're getting the bill for it.
Yeah.
The government hands us as taxpayers the bill for whatever happens in this world, and we're sitting here not even aware of what they're doing with our tax dollars. And
that's,
I think that's critical. Is this the world that we want? Is this what we're paying for? You know, we don't want our schools shot up. We don't want to live with bars on our windows. We want to be able to send our kids off in the morning and expect them to return home at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And that's not happening. And why is that? You know, it's we live in a violent culture, and our culture is a reflection of how, as individuals, we have come to think.
Now, the media
and that's
has...
what, if we change that, if us as individuals embrace peace, then we will develop a more peaceful country.
Now, you mentioned the media's responsibility in our situation, and I don't know that it has been expounded on enough, the idea that media has so much influence on what we think, how we think, and how we perceive what you just said, how our politicians are handling our business and our money. Explain a little bit about how you got that, how you put that in the book, how that came to you to write that out, as it were, in words.
Well, after working in Yemen and Libya and Iraq, Colombia, spending time in Afghanistan, I'd come home and I'd watch the news. And what I was seeing on the news, and it didn't matter which station, it was never the real
story.
It was never a clear picture. It was never a reflection of what I had witnessed. Yeah. We always hear the bad and rarely hear the good. And in talking to people in the Middle East, they would go to the mosque five times a day and be told how bad we were. And we would turn on CNN or Fox and hear how bad they were. When the reality is, like, in Kabul, Afghanistan, there was a retired British Army officer who was there working as a contractor. And he said to me, go for a walk. This city is safer than Washington, D.C. And I took his advice. I went for a walk. And I was apprehended by a 7-year-old girl and her 8-year-old brother, and they took me all over that one corner of Kabul, and I had a wonderful day. They were just fantastic and wonderful people. So I've concluded, and through all my travels, that a large majority of the people in this world want peace. That's not reflected in the media. And I think the other thing that's missing is that what I believe, and this is just my opinion, and people can argue with me till the cows come home, but what I believe is that, like Eisenhower said, we create enemies so there's somebody out there to buy our bombs.
Yeah.
This is about economics. This isn't about doing the right thing because it's the right thing to do. It's not about freedom and democracy. This is about weapons, oil, and drugs. And that is a story that we hear very, very little of coming from the media.
Yeah, they are.
You know, and there's people out there from the Middle East who insist that a large degree of this terrorist rhetoric that we hear is manufactured in the propaganda division of different corporations, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, who are, you know, who benefit from having a $550 billion defense budget.
Yeah.
So we can buy a lot of enemies for $550 billion. We can create a lot of enemies for $550 billion. And I really don't know what the truth is anymore about what's going on in our world after seeing as much of it as I have.
Now, so, you traveled quite extensively. What was your background for traveling so much? And you obviously had a chance to interact with people during your travels.
Well, maybe it sounds like I'm biting the hand that feeds me, but I was working in the oil industry. I have I'm educated in conflict resolution and was about to study law, and I really couldn't see myself chained to a desk for the rest of my life. And I ended up working internationally for many, many years, and I think what I've come to see is I've got so many friends from all over the world, and they're good people. I mean, yeah. I was treated like gold in Libya. I was treated like gold in Yemen. I was treated like gold in Iraq. I most certainly didn't get the sense from anybody in Iraq that we had liberated anybody. Mm. But I think more than anything, what I saw was major oil companies who were now having access to the oil in Iraq And I really believe that the people of this country got the bill for the military invasion, and the profit from the oil goes into a very, very few hands. Just a small group of people benefit from that. And I think the same thing in Afghanistan. The people get the bill. The military has become a useful working tool of corporate America, and we get the bill, and you know, we're closing schools, we can't afford to do many of the things, infrastructure, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, that President Obama alluded to last night in the State of the Union. It's fallen by the wayside, but our defense spending keeps going up, and the beneficiaries of that defense spending are just a handful of people, and the bulk of America is suffering as a result.
Yeah. If you just tuned in, by the way, this is Spotlight 92. We're talking to Johnny F. He's the author of The 12 Steps to Peace and Peace Anonymous. The book has actually been taken as an idea for getting peace through using the same steps, the 12 steps that were used by the very famous Alcoholics Anonymous, which have proven effective in changing the lives of over 3 million people worldwide. Was your personal experience, as far as that's concerned, I know that's in the book as well, was your personal experience with alcohol, which I had one myself, we won't get into that, but was your personal experience in that a way that brought your mind back around to being concerned and thinking about steps to peace?
Absolutely. I've been sober today nearly 20 years. In April, it'll be 20 years.
Congratulations.
And, you know, I'm living a life today that is 20 years ago I never would have imagined. And that's really what the steps are about. The steps aren't about getting me to quit drinking. The steps are about changing the way I think about my behavior. Mm-hmm. And, you know, step one is I was powerless over alcohol. And as far as the 12 steps to peace are concerned, are we powerless over war and violence?
Yeah.
And I think most of us would have to agree that we all want peace. Why don't we have it?
But then you've got these situations. A friend of mine that lives in Uganda, when we got to talking about the situation over there, she was here with the State Department visit, on a State Department visit, and we got to talking to the situation in Uganda, and the main thing she said that kept that country from seeing its potential and actually reaching the peace that that you would expect a country to have, or a group of people to have among themselves, was corruption and brutality, and a mentality of corruption and brutality that is sewn into the fabric of their political structure. There are so many countries like that. You know, again, how do you reach these leaders who are the ones who keep these things going, keep these wars, this hatred going?
That's an excellent question. 80% of the weapons sold last year in the world were sold by America.
Yeah, I know that. Well, you know, we can see part of that. I mean, can see in our own domestic situation, because with ARA, the ARA won't let anybody make inroads towards stopping or banning assault weapons, which I cannot imagine why we need assault weapons on the streets. Somebody's making money off of those weapons.
And that's the bottom line here. When you follow the money, you find the answers to what you're looking for. In Switzerland, practically every household has a weapon, and I've heard that the NRA arguing that point. And their gun violence rate is nowhere near what America's is. And there's you know, like, more than enough guns in this country to have one in every household, if not two or three.
Right.
So, you know, why is it? So it really boils down to how we think. I mean, if every household has a gun, but their gun violence history is 10% of what ours is. Why is that? What's the difference between their society and ours?
Well, I have heard that it is a matter of nationalism, of everyone in Sweden is Swiss, as opposed to the great cacophony of people that we have here in America. Do you think that might have something to do with it?
And that's possible. I'm not sure what the answer is. I think I too often get into the discussion of what the problem is, rather than focusing on what the solution is. And I think the interesting thing about the steps is that peace wasn't the goal. Peace was never the goal. But when I left Yemen after my first trip to the Middle East, I left there and I went to the International Convention of Alcoholics Anonymous in 2005. Mm-hmm. And what I witnessed was 50,000 people together who had lived with chaos and insanity and violence and all kinds of negative issues in their life. And what I encountered was 50,000 happy, smiling, productive, peaceful people. So if a bunch of drunks can change their lives and become peaceful and happy and content, what is it about these steps that changes people? And I think it's, you know, we really have to recognize that as an alcoholic, I had blamed everybody else for my behavior, all the problems in my life. And I hear that, like, if Saddam Hussein wasn't such a bad guy, we wouldn't have to invade Iraq. Well, was that the motive, or was it really oil?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, this is where, and the principles of the 12 steps, the truth, honesty, integrity, respect, love of fellow man. These are principles that
they used to mean a lot in our country.
Pardon me?
They used to mean a lot in our country.
Exactly.
Yes, they did.
We're wonderful people. We just don't know the truth about what our government and our corporations are doing in all of these countries overseas. And we don't know the truth.
Yeah, you know, there was that situation before the invasion of Iraq when all the nations were being involved and everybody was talking, and the Germans and the Russians and the French were like, no, 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 don't do that. And it later came out in some things that I was reading that they had just finished rebuilding the infrastructure, the oil infrastructure in Iraq, those three countries had, and they were very much opposed to destroying it. And it seems like to me, when you say that oil was the interest, it was like as if the interest here had decided that they wanted to take control. It was sort of like a hostile takeover of the oil interest in Iraq, as opposed to anything else, since they could never find weapons of mass destruction there. Is that pretty much what happened?
Pretty much. Weapons of mass destruction. I mean, we're sold a lot of this. There's a tremendous amount of fear involved in this. Yeah. And I think every time there's some kind of international mishap, for example, what happened in Algeria. I mean, we as taxpayers open our wallets and say, how much is it going to cost to feel safe?
Yeah.
And so much of everything is about controlling natural resources, controlling as much of the third world economy as possible. You know, we've overthrown democratically elected governments in Chile, in Nicaragua, in Honduras, and in Iran. There's a history there. There's a pattern there. Of our behavior in foreign policy, which has provided economic benefit for several corporations, but it's the damage that's occurred in the relationships that we've had with these countries takes years and years and years to heal. And you know, it's if we were stepping forward and accepting the responsibility for what we have done and encouraging other people to do the same, and as an alcoholic, that's what I have to be responsible for, my actions. What have I done wrong? And we never hear our politicians talking about what we do. It's always what everybody else does to us.
That's true.
And we do some very, very, very positive things out there in the world. But we also do some negative things. We're, nations are like people. And, you know, for nations to change, the people have to become involved. They have to become aware of the truth and what's going on. And I encourage people through my book not to believe a single solitary word that I write. The idea is to encourage people to do their own homework, to take the steps as a recipe for looking at the world. And if and that's what's happened when I started looking at the world in the same way I looked at myself when I started living according to these steps, I started to see things in a completely different light.
And it's
I mean, I don't think anybody out there is all bad or all good. We're just people, and we're trying to do the best we can. And this isn't about condemning anybody or any particular government, but it's trying to find a solution to the mess that we find ourselves in today.
Yeah. If you just tuned in, by the way, again, this is Spotlight 92. We are talking to Johnny F. He is the author of The 12 Steps to Peace and the inventor of Peace Anonymous, as it were. And we're talking about this book, which is on the market right now, as a matter of fact. You can pick it up at Amazon.com. Where are some other places they might find the book, John?
You can go to www.peaceanonymous.com, and there are links there to buy the book. Barnes & Noble are starting to put it on their shelves. If that particular Barnes & Noble doesn't have it, you can definitely order it at that store. You can go to Ex Libris, to their website as well, and purchase it there, which is the publisher.
Ex Libris.
So,
okay. Well, now, you mentioned in the book, and you go to great detail about the significant amount of detail, rather, about your personal relationship with God. And I know now, I'm from the generation of people who grew up in the church. My father was a minister. My grandparents, we all went to church quite a bit. And morality, shame, dignity, these are terms that we grew up with. And as I look at our pop culture now, going back into the media again, but our pop culture now seems to be totally devoid of all three of those things. Can you tell us a little bit about the significance of your relationship with religion and with God as far as you're writing the book and the way you think about these things?
This has been the most beautiful thing that I've ever really experienced. When I quit drinking, I was told to develop a relationship with a higher power, a God of my understanding, not necessarily anything that a specific religion embraced, but whatever felt right to me inside. And I really didn't even know where to begin, but like one of the guys said, you know, you just start praying. And I said, who to? And he said, it doesn't matter, just start talking. And I started to ask the power that had the sun come up every morning to take away my obsession to drink. And I asked and I asked and I asked and I asked. And when I left that particular rehab center that I was in, 10 days later, I remember the gate clanking shut behind me. I can still hear it. And in that second, I had this incredible feeling, unlike anything I had ever experienced before, that I would never have to drink again. Not that I wouldn't, but I would never have to. Mm. And that was the beginning of this spiritual quest that I've been on since that time. It's again, I pick up things from other religions, but the term spirituality means embracing the sacred is one of the definitions that I've hung on to, and to me, what's more sacred than life and love and peace?
Yeah.
And religion, and I don't want to knock anybody's religion, because you're more than entitled to, that's the beautiful thing, it's God as you understand God. But yeah. Religion has been used so many times to create war and to divide people. And that's what I love about the spirituality of Alcoholics Anonymous, because these 12 steps have been utilized in over 150 countries, regardless of religion or ethnicity or economic status. They can be embraced by anywhere, anybody, anywhere.
Yeah.
So if we're looking for a recipe for peace that is that has proven itself to work around the world, I can't think of a better one than the 12 steps.
Yeah, that sounds encouraging too.
Yeah. Hope is hard to find these days, and I feel that it's a blessing that I get to go to hang out with other alcoholics and meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know, like a lot of people think that, oh my God, you know, and I felt that way. I quit drinking, and that's the end of my life, you know. What am I going to do now? That was the beginning of my life. It's been just a beautiful, beautiful thing since then. Not problem-free, but I have a process to solve my problems today, and it's called the steps.
Oh, yeah. And the 12 steps to peace could be the same way, if we could make enough people look into their minds and realize how they would like to live.
Search your heart and soul. And you know, I mean, I touch on this in the book as well. You know, like, we have to ask ourselves. I started asking myself the same questions I asked myself when I quit drinking. Like, is this working? Is this making me happy? Is my behavior making my life better, or you know, is this creating the world that I want?
Mm.
And the answers no longer came out of the bottle, and I believe the answers to the world's issues and the world's problems, no matter how much we fight and create war, the whole idea about controlling another human being. And that's what war is. It's about control. That's what all violence is. It's about control.
Yeah.
Is it working?
Well, you know, the irony of you being a person skilled in crisis resolution, coming through the 12-step program to get rid of that alcohol, get it out of your life, as it was. I think that speaks a lot to the idea of what you said, that you have to want to do this thing. You have to want to have peace. You have to want to not be an alcoholic. And on the same token, you have to want to lose weight. It's a matter of personal desire.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's a matter of personal desire. But I've had people suggest that these 12 steps should be taught in school. You know, because they are such a useful way, it's a manner of living that is just, it just creates such a wonderful life.
Yeah. Respect, dignity, pride, these things are some things that we really need to get back into our consciousness, I think.
Melvin, there's something I'd like to read to you out of this book that... It just, The first time I read it, I knew I had to put it in here somewhere. And it's just a very short paragraph. Is that okay?
Sure, go ahead. We're running out of time, but we can do that.
Right. This is written by Megan Stack, who was a foreign correspondent with the LA Times. And it's out of a book she wrote called Every Man in This Village is a Liar. Okay. And this is after writing, in this book, she talks about her relationship with people in about 7 or 8 different Middle East countries. But this is what she says about war. Here is the truth. It matters what you do at war. It matters more than you ever want to know. Because countries, like people, have collective consciousness and memories and souls. And the violence we deliver in the name of our nation is pooled like sickly tar at the bottom of who we are. The soldiers who don't die for us come home again. They bring with them the killers they became on our national behalf and sit with their polluted memories and broken emotions in our homes and schools and temples. We may wish it were not so, but action amounts to identity. We become what we do. You can tell yourself all the stories you want, but you can't leave your actions over there. You can't build a wall and expect to live on the other side of memory. All of that poison seeps back into our soil.
Wow. Profound thought for me, sure.
We have a nation that goes to war on a regular basis. And we embrace our military. We fund our military at all costs. Why are we so surprised when we end up with guns in schools? When we put our military right up there on such a high pedestal, and we honor these people, that, and there's nothing wrong. It's like having guns. I don't need a military. I have no desire to ban guns. I have no desire to ban alcohol. But we have to think about what we're doing. And we have to do the right thing because it's the right thing to do, not the profitable thing.
Yeah.
The right thing.
Right on. Well, once again, it's The 12 Steps to Peace by Johnny F. Peace Anonymous. And it's a very good book to read. And very and will stir your consciousness, which is something that all literature should do. Johnny F., thank you so much for being our guest today.
Thank you very, very much, Mom.
I hope that this book sells 1 million copies a day until we can find enough people to believe that they can stop war and make peace more of what we live for. All right. And this has been Spotlight 92. We'll do it again next week. In the meantime, you're back for more of the best in jazz. This is U92 FM.